Howdy, folks. Welcome back to Leave the Swamp, the Secession Podcast. Thanks so much for joining me on this episode. This is James Malcontent Byrne here, back with you for another edition. And thank you for joining the cause for a peaceful and friendly separation, something that is drastically needed nowadays. You know, I'm sure a lot of you have, if you hadn't seen it, you've probably seen a picture of it or had at least, you know, heard about the speech that the illustrious President, El Presidente, President Brandon gave, I guess, the beginning of this month, September, in which he literally looked like he was the character out of V for Vendetta. You know, standing in front of like the red background. You know, they should have had red flags draped on either side, maybe even the Cobra symbol there next to him. Quite an amazing speech, but I think it really illustrates where we are in this confederation of states at this moment in time. At the very beginning, what's interesting is, you know, the cameras show in the door to Independence Hall, and it's shut for a while on the video that I watched. Then all of a sudden, the door opens, you know, and no one's standing there. It's just a big flag of the United States sitting there several, you know, moments later. Then this announcer gets on the PA and says, "Ladies and gentlemen, introducing, you know, the President of the United States and his wife," or whatever. And then all of a sudden, you know, the big presidential fanfare fires up. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then these two Imperial Marines walk out to flank the doors on either side. And then all of a sudden, here comes President Brandon and his wife walking out. And what's interesting is it's like, it's literally like the door, like these things you probably may have seen in the past when the king or the queen, you know, is introduced and they come out and everyone's watching and like in awe of the king, you know. And here comes the emperor. Truly what it is really the elected emperor walking down, you know, elected, I guess that could be debated, but walking down the aisle to come and tell all of us peons, you know, what the deal is and, you know, how horrible of a country it is, but how great it could be if we just follow him and, you know, and keep. What's interesting about this is not so much the red on either side, but how good of politicians, especially the lefties are. The lefties, you know, typically represented by the Democratic Party, but just the left in general. Lefties are so good because they have no qualms of being obvious and utter hypocrites amongst what they say versus what they do. And they have no problem contradicting themselves because they know that their true blue followers don't really think for themselves or don't really think. So it doesn't matter whether they contradict themselves or not. One thing that I appreciate about folks on the right, quote unquote, or folks that tend to use the word conservative or whatever, they tend to come from a position of a little more probably integrity, less, I mean, I hesitate even saying this, but, you know, less, maybe less desire for power, you know, these type things. So they tend to have a little more understanding that, you know, I got to have a consistent position about something. You know, does that contradict that? Now, I'm not talking about the politicians necessarily. I'm just talking about you and me, everyday folks, that may align themselves with, you know, the right, if you will. So when you have folks on the left that have zero shame, where the lefties have zero shame and all they want is power, they're able to go out there and stand up and talk for, say, 30 minutes about issues, most of them manufactured, created out of whole cloth, that they encourage to encourage division amongst people so that they can conquer us. You know, within the last 3 minutes, basically contradict everything they just said in the previous 30 minutes and saying how we're great people, we're united, we're one, you know, we're better than this, da 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 da. It's just absolutely amazing if people would just sit down and listen to what's said in these speeches. Now, have you ever asked yourself, when you're looking at folks in the federal government, like President Brandon or Nasty Pelosi, or I mean, any of these idiots out there, and you ask yourself, why is it absolutely necessary, and why is it required? Why is it like a fact of life that me, living thousands of miles away from Mordor, D.C., why is it that these people should have any right or any right to tell me what I should or shouldn't do or can and can't do in my life? All you gotta do is watch a speech like that one that Brandon gave and just think, sit there and think, how is it that this person has any power over me? Well, I'll tell you why. It's because we all give it to this person. They rely on us giving it to them. They rely on our lack of caring, our lack of engagement, our deference to authority. They essentially prey on the traditions in this country of respect for our leaders and the rule of law and things of that nature. Now, the worst of the worst people are in there truly taking advantage and preying on that sentiment. And, you know, the whole point of this discussion, these discussions here, is to basically hopefully get across the point and the thought that, number one, you know, no one needs to really tell you what to do. You know more or less what's right and wrong. So if we start from that basic premise, and you take it to its logical conclusion, there's really no argument that can be made to justify the continued existence under the rule of thumb of Mordor, D.C. and all these idiots that go there. You know, why is it that as a people we're always constantly making fun or saying things that exhibit our lack of respect for politicians, especially ones that go to Washington, yet at the same time we give them deference and we continue to allow ourselves to, you know, remain under this system where they have power over our lives? That makes absolutely no sense to me. I mean, just look recently. I've mentioned this before, kind of, but okay, this whole thing going on in the Ukraine, or in Ukraine, between them and Russia, okay? How is that any of our business? How is that any of your business? How is that any of my business? Here I am, sitting here in little old, you know, central Texas, where I'm trying to run my own business, run a family business, you know, put out a few of these little discussions every now and then. You know, I have nothing to do with Russia or Ukraine. However, these idiots in Washington are able to basically write billions of checks for tens of billions of dollars to give, well, supposedly, quote unquote, to aid Ukraine against Russia, which, why did these idiots in Mordor decide that Russia was my enemy in the first place? Why? Who are they to say that? You know, I don't give a shit one way or the other about Russia or Ukraine enough to say one is my enemy or not. But they're speaking in my name by saying that. And what they're doing is they are sending my money, your money, not necessarily to Ukraine for support, even though that's what they call it. It's really to all of our contractors, our parasitic military contractors in this country and the banks that finance them. It's another gigantic welfare program sent to the to all these you know, these parasitic companies that just that thrive on this gigantic utter corruption coming out of Mordor. You know, it's absolutely hilarious to me that no one bats an eye or asks the question, oh, you know what, could that $80 billion that quote-unquote went to Ukrainian aid, could that have maybe been used a little better here at home amongst the states rather than sending it over there? No, of course not. You know, that's the highest and best use of that capital is to send it over there, you know, in my name, you know, in your name. No, it's about damn time that all of this graft corruption ends. All of the crap coming out of Mordor, D.C., not necessarily, I'm not even advocating really ending it. What I'm advocating, obviously, here is separating ourselves from it to where we can decide here at home what happens with our hard-earned capital. Remember my discussion about what is the most precious resource any person has? Your time. Because that's something you can never get back. Every second you get older and closer to death. Well, when you're working, what are you doing? You trade your time for money, some representation of a of like some asset that will preserve what you earn by spending your time. Okay? So what happens when the government does two things? They tax you. Remember, tax is theft, no matter what, no matter any way you look at it. When they do that, that means they're stealing your time. They're stealing your life from you. Okay? Or what happens when government just types on a keyboard and creates $1 billion out of nothing? What are they doing? Well, they're watering down the purchasing power of the capital that you've saved. So, in effect, it is a tax in and of itself. So what happens there? They're stealing your life. So let's go back and look at just this one example of a way the federal government is literally stealing your life from you. Well, it's by passing these tens of billion dollar aid packages or whatever you want to call it to a country halfway across the world that we have nothing to do with, that we should have nothing to do with. We should be minding our own business here. So what does that mean? They're literally stealing your life to give it, not necessarily to that country over there, but to give it to the parasitic contractors that make the things that evidently go over there and or that money just gets stolen in the first place. So once again, this is the out-of-control federal government doing things to steal your life from you. How does that tie into this podcast, Leaving the Swamp? Well, what I would argue is leaving the swamp would at least give us a better ability, a better chance at controlling how much of our life is stolen. Right now, the federal government, right now we're ruled over by a federal government of, you know, an out-of-control bureaucracy that does whatever it wants in a Congress that'll spend money like, you know, like quote-unquote drunken sailors, further stealing, you know, your life from you. 330 million people or so, where each one of us has zero say in what happens. Our vote doesn't matter on a federal level. Statistically, our votes are irrelevant. How would secession solve this? I wouldn't argue that it necessarily solves this, but it gives us a better fighting chance. So, for instance, as you know, I'm here in Central Texas. Let's say Texas seceded. Well, yes, there's 30 million people in Texas. That's a hell of a lot of people. But what does that do? That allows, at least on a statewide or would be a republic wide of Texas level, those type of arguments can be made in Austin amongst ourselves here, where, you know, where there'd be a better chance at maybe more rural areas or folks with our kind of more like-minded libertarian bent can have a little more say against the big cities, you know, Houston, Dallas, Austin, etc. But at least it's all here, and it's all people that you kind of know a little more, that have more of a common culture, or at least a background of a culture. You know, we're not fighting. Now, there are Yankees here, no question about it. But we're not fighting Northern Yankees or West Coast Yankees. And yes, there are Yankees everywhere. Yankee doesn't mean just that you're from New York. A Yankee means that you're the type of person that always feels like you have to have your way, or you have to tell other people how to live their life. You're a Puritan. You know, it's got to be your way or the highway. So here, I think so far in the history of Texas, as an example, we've tended to show, or we've been able to show that, yes, when there's a melting pot of people that come here, because that's all Texas has ever really been, is immigrants from other places, that over time we tend to understand each other and come together as Texans, in that, you know, the idea is being a rough and tumble individual, right? If we can maintain that kind of mindset and encourage all the other people moving here from other places to pick up that mindset and leave behind any Yankee mindset that they might have had in coming here, then we might have a fighting chance, even with 30 million people here. You know, I would rather have, you know, you got to start somewhere, right? I'd rather have a situation where there's 30 million of us to figure things out than 330 million people. You know, at least we can all kind of understand what Texas is about, as I've been saying. So, you know, it's funny. I like to listen to discussions and podcasts. I love history. And it's really interesting to kind of understand, you know, how the U.S. federal government and the Constitution, the original design and intention of what was written in the Constitution to be, and what are a lot of the limitations of how the Constitution was written and what happened. I got to tell you, the more I study it and think about it, I fall more under the Lysander Spooner interpretation of the Constitution, in that it has ultimately been a failure, in the sense that it's the original intent of it to limit the power of government. It's failed, because we now have the most powerful most powerful government in the history of the world. However, where it did succeed was it helped to reinforce a thought of kind of reinforce like the seeds planting of a thought to, yeah, you know, somewhere there's something wrong about government having unlimited power. So that's where it has succeeded. Now, the Spooner idea is that the federal government, either it's failed because it's either authorized everything that the federal government does now, or it's failed because it didn't, but it was powerless to stop it. That's where I tend to agree on the idea of the Constitution, the United States Constitution we have. Where am I going with this? Well, the history, a lot of folks tend to get bogged down arguing about, you know, is something constitutional or not? You know, well, that game has already been lost, because obviously the federal government doesn't play by the same rules that it expects us to, namely that, you know, the Constitution places chains on what the federal government can do, because obviously we can all agree that the federal government does whatever it wants. But I do think it's interesting to kind of talk about two parts of the Constitution that if we wanted to hide behind, if you will, would be kind of the ultimate impetus to, you know, prove that the experiment has kind of failed and we need to go off on our own and figure it out on our own. I would call your attention to the Ninth and Tenth Amendments to the U.S. Constitution. So the Ninth Amendment reads, "The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people." Well, so basically it's saying the Constitution, just because it says there are certain rights that folks have, it shouldn't be imply that because a right is not listed here, the people don't have it. You know, I think that's an interesting one because, I mean, we hear that a lot. A lot of times folks will appeal to the Bill of Rights and say, well, it's not in there, so you can't do it. Well, that's not, the Ninth Amendment explicitly says, no, that's not the case. This just talks about a few rights that we wanted to point out. Okay. The Tenth Amendment, which is the most important amendment, should have been the First Amendment, says, "The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people." So basically what that's saying is, look, if it's not in the Constitution, if the states did not give the federal government the power to do something explicitly in the Constitution, then the federal government can't do it. So that amendment right there proves that the federal government no longer plays by its own rules and does whatever it wants. Everything it does violates the 10th Amendment to the Constitution, except for a few limited powers. So that right there shows there are no rules anymore. There is no appeal to history or, you know, what courts have decided. It now comes down to, do we as a people of the great state of Texas want to say no more? We no longer want to have the overarching power of the federal government to tell us what to do anymore. Do we want to be drugged down into the abyss with all the other states by this utterly immoral and corrupt federal government? And the answer has to be no if we want to have any hope of future prosperity. If we say yes, we want to stay and, you know, take our chances, then there is no doubt that we will be drugged down into the abyss, and that will be a horrible thing. We have a chance to set our own destiny, to set our own ways forward. We could turn around where things are growing right now. The only way to do it is to leave the swamp, is to separate, have a peaceful separation from the United States in Mordor, D.C. There is no reforming the federal government from within. It's too entrenched. It's too much power there. There's no point or hope in trying to convince other states to come along. They can if they'd like. But the power is all in our hands here. The states have all the power, which means the people of the states have all the power. And if a state wanted to say no, no more, they could do it. I'm all for nullification of federal laws. I think that should be the first step with the ultimate idea of leaving. Because nullification is nice, but it still means you'll be fighting that battle forever. Because the federal government will not stop trying to tell us what to do. So, just jumping back to, you know, I guess where we started, you know, if it hadn't been more clear than it was with that speech, that the president is now the emperor of the United States. And with that speech, it couldn't be more clear that it's not, it's basically a warning by the giant federal parasite of the federal government, parasite on the backs of you and me, the people, to back off and watch yourself. And you better do what we say, and you better fall in line. Don't step outside the box, or you'll be branded a terrorist, domestic terrorist, or a traitor, or, you know, whatever they want to say. I mean, that speech was basically drawing the line in the sand. You know, drawing the line in the sand against folks like this podcast and folks like you who listen to stuff like this. I would give them props in the sense that they're smart. They're trying to get ahead of the game to scare people enough ahead of the time, because they know what's coming. They know this is going to happen. They know the abyss is staring them in the face. And the only way they can survive is if they've sufficiently scared all the people, scared them against rising up against them. And not so much rising up against them. I think what they're more scared about is exactly what I'm talking about here and advocating here, and that is a peaceful and friendly separation. Because if it truly is a peaceful and friendly separation, what could possibly be their argument against it? It couldn't be a moral or ethical one. Because if there's a group of people or a spouse that feels they've been abused so much and they want to separate, they want to go their own way, live their own life without being abused anymore, could someone truly morally or ethically argue against that or fight against that and force them to be in an abusive relationship? No, and they know they can't do that. They know they lose immediately the high ground if we go about this in a peaceful and friendly way by saying, let bygones be bygones. You know, we'll move on with our own stuff. You keep your own stuff. We'll take what obligations are ours on our own and we'll move on. You know, we're not going to fight about it. We're just going to go and do it. You know, here, we'll hand you our divorce papers, you know. And that's it, you know. Now, that then puts the impetus on them to say, okay, are you going to sign the divorce papers? Are you going to throw them back in our face and hold a gun to our head saying you ain't going nowhere? You know, what they want is us to be the militant, belligerent ones in this whole process. That way they can come in and truly claim, oh, they're our domestic terrorists, you know, and all that bullshit. So no, this whole podcast advocates for the peaceful and friendly separation. That's why I say it at the beginning of every podcast. You know, and if we build the momentum towards that, if we build a core group of people that evangelize that all the time, you know, if we build the 300 to do that, then we can get there. You know, and it'll be such a grassroots effort that there's no way it can be stopped by any amount of vitriolic, horrible rhetoric coming from Emperor Brandon or anybody else, the emperor after him. You know, because once that starts, it's unstoppable. So anyway, I just kind of wanted to, at this point, leave y'all with that thought. Let's please continue to think this through. If you agree and you want to join the cause for a peaceful and friendly separation, awesome. Let me know. Go to leavetheswamp.com. Sign up your email there. Or at the very least, just tell more folks about it. You know, keep bringing up the word secession and friendly conversation. You know, it's always great to see people's faces kind of go, oh my God. But at least, you know, saying the word plants the seed, you know, and that's what's needed. We got to start somewhere. We got to start now. If we don't do it, then we will be dragged down into the abyss by the Mordor Balrog, and it'll be a terrible, it'll be very hard. And I just don't want that for my children. When I know and I can see we have a chance to break away and go our own way up and not down, you know, it's right there in front of us. If we just grab it, that opportunity is right there in front of us. If we just grab it, you know, it'll be hard, of course, but it's there. The possibility is there. So I'm optimistic that this movement will gain a lot of momentum. You know, whether I'm, you know, in the leadership of it or not, I don't really care. I just would rather be, I would rather this movement get to where at least any arguments that we have or disagreements we have between each other are handled in Austin or at the county level here, never handled or never considered they have to be handled in Washington, D.C., you know, in Mordor. We need to destroy the Tower of the All-Seeing Eye, you know, or at the very least, put blinders on the All-Seeing Eye at the borders of Texas. That's what needs to happen. We need to erect our borders on the Sabine so that All-Seeing Eye cannot see over our walls, basically, you know, our metaphorical wall into Texas. You know, they could look everywhere else, but it can't look into Texas because Texas is Texas. It's not the bastardized United States that we're part of now. So if you're here and you have in you know, this resonates with you, at the very least, all I ask is you mention it to folks whenever it makes sense. You know, just ask the question, why does Texas continue to be part of the United States when it can easily be its own country, its own massively prosperous country? Why do we keep getting dragged down into the mud by Mordor? No more. All right. That's all I got for you. So think about it, and I'll catch you on the next one. Thank you for listening.